The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Where Were You in 92 is a production of iHeartRadio. A special note, this episode features themes of sexual assault and may not be suitable for all listeners. Welcome to Where Were You in 92, a podcast in which I, your host, Jason Lanfier, look back at the major hits, one-hit wonders, shocking news stories, and irresistible scandals that shaped what might be the wildest, most eclectic, most controversial 12 months of music ever. This week, we take a brief pit stop in our crazy ride through 1992 for something extra special, an intimate chat with singer-songwriter Tori Amos, who paired pianos and guitars and shook the music world to its core with her debut solo album, Little Earthquakes. In an expanded interview from episode 5, we discuss the origins of the record, the uphill battle Amos faced to get it made, the powerful response she received to standout tracks like Silent All These Years and Me and a Gun, and her work as the first spokesperson for the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, or RAIN. Be sure to tune in next week for our final episode, which explores how in 1992, musicians like George Michael, Madonna, Elton John, Queen, U2, and TLC confronted the AIDS crisis head-on. So the first question I'm asking guests on this show is a very simple one, but also a very weighted, very layered one, I think, which is, where were you in 1992, mentally, physically?
I was releasing a record called Little Earthquakes. And so I reckon I was probably in the UK, going back and forth to the States and the UK early in 92, and the record came out, and I started to go on a world tour.
But it was a rocky road, of course. It was not, it wasn't the easiest. The conception was not easy, the release wasn't easy, and you definitely had to fight for this record.
Yeah, I had to fight. I had to fight for the record. And the other thing is, it was a process. So it really took about 4 years, if I'm being fair and accurate about the whole thing. And it happened in stages. So the first demos that I was doing, I was doing with a producer called Eric Ross. And then David Sergerson got involved and produced a bunch of songs, which included songs on the record like Crucify and Silent All These Years and Winter. And when we turned in the record, then it was not accepted. So the suggestion was from a producer to the head of Atlantic at the time, who was Doug Morris, the suggestion was take all the pianos off and put guitars on. And Doug and I were able to come to a different outcome, which was I would turn in a few more produced tracks. And so I turned to Eric Ross and musicians that I knew in LA, friends, to come and collaborate. And then that was the next stage.
I love in Resistance, which is your latest book, which is from 2020, which I think came out right, really, after the pandemic struck.
Yes, it did. You're right.
You address the conversation you had to have with the muses about using your arsenal, what you had in your arsenal at that time. I think you were 26, 27?
Around that, yeah.
Yeah, and using the arsenal that you had to go up against these label execs and fight to keep your voice and keep the piano as an, you know, integral part of this record. So tell me about that conversation that you had, you know, with the muses and how you got your way in the end.
Well, at the time, people, if you weren't around then and aware of what was happening in the music world, you might not know this, and the piano was not cool. So Elton and Billy, they were still touring the world, and they were, you know, these legends where it was embraced and accepted because of their track record. They'd been around a long, long time. But really, what was happening in the music scene was women like Tracy Chapman and Suzanne Vega, the guitar, was being embraced, which is great. But the piano was seen as some kind of, well, let's put it this way, not part of the Seattle sound. It wasn't considered, oh, this could stand next to grunge and be badass. It was not seen as that. So I think it's really important that people realize the context and the narrative. So it was my mission because I had ditched the piano on a record I made in 1988 that bombed called Why Can't Tori Read. So I followed what people were saying at the time, which is embrace the synthesizer and embrace this other type of sound. And, you know, the piano's history, that's leave it back in the 70s. So in my Dark Night of the Soul, after that album bombed, I crawled back to the piano and realized that I had to find out who I was as an artist, as a human being, through the piano. That's where these songs came. I didn't know my identity, Jason, anymore, because I had turned myself into so many different people that I wasn't. I'd worn so many masks to try and get out of the barroom that I didn't know who I was anymore. So the piano had to take me back to when I was 5 years old, studying at the Peabody Conservatory, and take me back to a magical time when music was magic, and I had completely burned that to the ground.
And you wanted desperately to revisit it and bring it back. And then you were met with...
Resistance.
Yes. I'm tapping the book. And, you know, I think that when you titled the book Resistance, I think you meant from both perspectives. Like, we're met with resistance, but you have to resist and maintain your autonomy and maintain your vision. And this record, I think, encapsulates that so perfectly. You write a really detailed account of how Girl, the song Girl, was not one of the original cuts you submitted, one of the 10 to 12 original cuts you submitted.
Correct. That's right.
And you went home. You were with your parents.
Yes.
And it came to you. The girl started to speak to you. The muses started to speak to you. And you talk about how Girl ended up being salvation, a bridge, really, that helped get you to, from the original Little Earthquakes, your original vision, to a vision that was a little bit more what that, you know, the label wanted.
What, yeah. What's so funny about that? So Girl was documenting what I was going through in my battle at that time. I was having the battle. But of course, I have to honor Doug Morris. He said, go on, here's some money. And he was honest. He said, you and the producer you worked with for the first set of cuts, blew the budget. Of course, I didn't see any of that money, but moving on. So we didn't have a lot, but hey ho, we were going to make these four tracks, and I didn't know what the four tracks were going to be, but I knew they needed to have something different than the 12 I had turned in. So not knowing, sometimes as a songwriter, you've no idea where you're going or how you're going to get there. So the best thing is to listen. The strongest thing a songwriter can do is to sit and listen. You're listening to the muses, you're observing, you're trying to be in the moment, and you're hoping that you're going to be, I don't know, led to this magical sonic place. Mm. And sometimes they only give you a two-bar phrase, those muses. Sometimes you don't get the whole song. But Girl was reflecting what I was living at the time, which was she's been everybody else's girl. Maybe one day she'll be her own. And it's like, yes, yes, T.A., come on. You've got to stop being such a sponge and just saying, okay, I'll twist myself and turn myself into whatever you want just because you want to leave the bar room. What if you never leave the bar room? You need to go there, because if you can accept that, then you will write what you need to write for your soul, not for somebody else having an opinion. It's just an opinion, and usually they're wrong. Usually they're wrong. So then the four songs came, and by that time I turned them in, but Doug had found Silent all these years. He had listened to it going home in his car one night, and he got it. The penny dropped, and he said, okay, I realize this was one of the original 12, but I get it. I get it now, and I think you need to go to England. And I went, pardon? What? He said, yes, I have a counterpart over there called Max Hull, East West Records in London, and he will get it. He will understand, and his team will understand what to do with this. And that was the next phase of the journey.
It's fascinating, too. When I read that, it made total sense to me, because I thought, this is a country where Wuthering Heights,
yes,
by Kate Bush, one of your heroes, one of my heroes,
yes,
was a number one song, which that would just never happen in America. So, you know, not to say that Silent All These Years was, you know, derivative of Kate Bush by any means, but it's a piano-based track. It, yeah, is very much a classically sounding piano-led ballad.
Yes, piano and orchestra, and that, not one note changed on that, mm-hmm, from when we turned it in. I think it might have just had a different mix, but I don't mean a dance, I don't mean a remix.
Right.
I'm talking about just some sonic sweetening.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, boost the mids or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But honestly, that song was what it was from day dot. And it just, I found it really intriguing that people were gravitating toward that song. And at that time, if you remember, you must have been a youngin' when this happened, very, very young, was Anita Hill had just been on television. I saw her on television. I was in England at the time. This was 91, autumn of 91. And she said something to the effect of, I couldn't stay silent any longer, something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, Silent All These Years was getting played on the radio in England. Now, sometimes when you're writing a song, you have no idea the moment that it's going to cross another moment. Well, this was volcanic, what was happening with Anita Hill. And I encourage people to read the story if you haven't read her story. But she was talking about sexual assault, allegedly with a chief justice who is still a chief justice. And this was shocking the world and the courage that it took for her to speak. And it just so happened that this song, Silent All These Years, was coming out within a couple weeks of this shock. So it was really relevant at the time. And when I was writing it, you have no idea what circumstances are going to cross a song's path, which then becomes part of the narrative.
It really, it took on a new relevance, as you're saying, a new meaning, and it sort of almost became bigger than you. And it has continued to resonate through the ages. You can apply that song to, you know, just a few years after Anita Hill, we had Monica Lewinsky. And then she was silenced, but then she came forward, what, 2 decades later, and she's like, excuse me, my voice was lost in
That's
all of
right.
this, in this Clinton scandal. Let me tell my side of the story now.
That's right.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
In 1992, I started to realize people would stand after the concert by the stage door to tell me their story. And that began this kind of exchange that's been happening now for 30 years, which is people, it's pretty humbling when you think they're telling you some of their very intimate experiences. Or fears, or some people even saying, I don't feel worthy of a story because my story isn't one of assault. And so then, and you have to have compassion and understand that everyone has a story, and it's unique to you, and it's important. Everyone's story is important, but it needs to be valued. And it really opened me up to understanding that everybody has a story to tell, and each one needs to be valued.
Was that a breakthrough moment for you when fans responded to that song that way and came to speak to you backstage? Or was there another moment where you realized, oh, wow, my music is really touching people? The music from Little Earthquakes is really touching people in a way that my music has not touch people before.
I was learning about it then, and it was humbling because I'm a conduit for the muses. I do not write these on my own. I promise you, hand on my heart, because I know when I write things on my own. I can do that. I have the toolbox to do that, but it's not the same. It's not the same without that collaboration. And I think that they're tough teachers sometimes, and they demand whomever they're working with, and they're working with all kinds of people in all kinds of genres, as we both know. But I think it was in 1994 when a young girl heard a song called Mina Gunn, which is a song on Little Earthquakes, about a sexual assault. And she fainted during the song. And after the show, they had taken her backstage, and she told me her story. And she said, "Can I please come on the road? I'll do anything. I'll do anything. I'll work in the kitchens or whatever I can do. Because my stepfather raped me last night. He will tomorrow night. And when I get in tonight, he will." And so I was, "Of course, you're coming on the road with me, and we'll figure it out." Now, naively, Jason, of course, I don't understand legal. Of course, I'm not a psychiatrist. I didn't understand what was happening, but I saw the terror in the eyes and in my, just trying to do something. You're trying to do something. So I get a call from legal coming into the venue saying, "You will be arrested for kidnapping. You are crossing state line tonight on the buses, and you will be arrested." And at the time, there just wasn't a place where I knew where to call. Now, when she walked out that, I watched her go. I've never seen her again. I've never heard from her again. And it plagues me to this day, because we have no idea. But what she inspired was me then galvanized to work with Rain, and I was asked to be their first spokesperson and to work with that organization. It's still around, and it's a national hotline.
Can you tell listeners what RAIN is, in case they're not familiar with it?
RAIN is the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, 1-800-656-HOPE. And there are trained people there to take the calls. They have a military section, and then they have a civilian section. And during the pandemic, what we learned is that we've had so many calls from younger people because of the house arrest and kids not being able to reach out to people who can then help them, so that they've been isolated. And that's one of the tragedies of this pandemic and the lockdowns.
It's, you've already touched on two very raw and painful tracks from that, from the record Little Earthquakes. Me and a Gun is a pivotal track, a touchstone in your career. And I mean, you've spoken already about the significance of it and how it resonated with people. Take me to that moment when you knew you had to write that song, when you had to include it on the record, when the muses spoke to you and said, "Tori, this is maybe a risk. This is maybe going to be the most challenging moment of your career, but we got to do this."
Yes. There are moments when you're guided. And I was guided to do this a cappella. And there's a level of trust that you have with the muses in the moment, because, my goodness, when you're creating and talking about some of the harrowing things, which some of the songs over the years cover difficult, you know, the skin is off. We're unzipping, getting to those deep emotions that people have been harboring their whole lives, and you're going into the wound. And how you go into that wound, and then how you hopefully the song walks with someone through their dark night. You know, that is what the muses do. And so being part of that, there's a huge responsibility, because you're thinking, if I get this wrong, if I get this wrong, if I tell this story wrong, then what? I don't want to do harm. I don't want to take somebody to a place and get them shattered. You want to take them to a place of recognition of, okay, this might have happened to him, to her, to them. And then they find something empowering by it. Now, maybe there's a long journey that has to happen from victim to survivor. Maybe there's a lot of work that will have to be done. But the first step is always acknowledging and not running away, you know, from those tragic moments that sometimes people want to block out. So working with Rain all these years has really taught me a lot. And the people that are on that front line every day, wow, what a commitment that they have. But it all started by a song that then people embraced and then told their story to me.
I've always been, you know, interested in why you decided to do it a cappella, and if you were met with, not to go back to this word again, but resistance from the label, because not only did this song not have guitars, it didn't even have pianos. It had nothing. It was the rawest thing imaginable. And the only thing I could compare it to at that time, I remember Behind the Wall from Tracy Chapman, from her first record. Do you remember that song?
I do.
Which was also about, I mean, abuse. And it was a cappella. And I remember my father being obsessed with that record and playing it on repeat. And I remember that song would always, I was very, very, very young, but I remember it would always stop me in my tracks because it was unlike anything I had ever heard from a pop or rock or folk musician. And especially a female musician.
Yes, it was so powerful.
It was so powerful. And so, you know, fast forward 4 years later, I believe Tracy Chapman's debut was 88. You bring me in a gun, and but nobody was really doing that. Nobody was really making a cappella songs, especially women who they were already brushed to the side still, you know, in rock and pop music.
Well, there was a faction at the label that didn't want this song on, mm-hmm. and said, this is really disturbing. I'm disturbed by this. And I said, if you were not disturbed by this, then that would be scary. You need to be disturbed. Sometimes music wants to be disturbing. That's what it is. So let's not resist that. Let's embrace that. But I had to really, again, I had to put up a resistance of capitulating. I had to be strong. I had to stand by the songs, and also I had to listen to some of the improvements that the team wanted me to make. Because, you know, we're back to babies in bathwater, just throwing everything out just to dig your heels in. That's not very clever. So sometimes taking on board somebody's comment, someone's critique of something, so that we can improve it. And that was a huge learning curve as a creator. When do you have a think tank where you can agree with some things, and then you think, well, not so fast. I think we're having a knee-jerk reaction, and we need to be bold and brave and stand by the a cappella track, and it stays on.
And you made concessions.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you went back and you said, okay, I'm not going to give you one song with guitars.
I'm going to give you four.
Including Girl, including
Precious Things,
which I believe you share a story in Resistance. I think you traveled, you headed west. You were in America at that point,
yes,
right? You headed west.
Yes.
I think you were in the Rockies?
Yes.
Walking. And I think you said just a couple of words came to you as you're on this hike. So tell me about Precious Things.
Well, Eric Ross and I took a trip out west, and he was producing these four tracks with me. And I had a lot of respect for his musicality. So we were on this trip, and by now we were in Colorado. And if I remember correctly, I fell under the weather. And sometimes when these things happen, it's strange. It's almost as if, you know, you're not in protective mode. You get worn down a bit, whether it's the veil drops. And I was in the woods somewhere and walking somewhere. And then, like we've talked about before, those muses, sometimes they just sprinkle a few bars and the penny drops again. And you think, okay, this is something. This is not just, you know, me singing in the shower today, which, you know, we all do, and we all make up these silly songs, which I make up a silly song all the time. But Precious Things, I knew she was coming to be on the record. I knew that she was bursting through. And, creating that was a challenge, but we got there.
For anyone who thinks, who's not as familiar with your music, which that's criminal, but and thinks that Tori Amos cannot rock, you've never heard Precious Things, because hearing that is revelatory. The drums alone are massive. And then the bridge is just explosive. And also, you use these voices throughout the record, and you use them in Precious Things, and you use them in Girl, and they almost, it's a male voice, and it almost sounds demonic. It sounds dark. And I've always, you know, I've always wondered, it really stood out to me when I discovered this record and fell in love with it, because I had never really heard anything like it. And, you know, Kate Bush experimented, again, to bring up Kate Bush, she experimented again with those voices.
Yes, she did.
On The Dreaming and on Hounds of Love. And yes, there was a little bit of that in this record. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I think what was happening at the time was that there was a freedom to create, because the worst thing that I could ever imagine in music was to put out a record and be laughed at, be ridiculed. And the thing in LA that you really don't want to catch is failure. You will not be going to any parties if you have failed. And I remember walking into a little restaurant that I always walked into, and these people were in the music business. And as I passed by, they laughed. They laughed at me. And I was called something like a bimbo in Billboard. You know, it was a fleeting moment, because nobody cared. Failure gets brushed under the rug and you get swept out, you know, with the garbage. You're garbage. But not Shirley Manson. Lovely Shirley Manson. So things like Precious Things, the voices, I was going through, you know, I was crossing the River Styx. I was going to meet Persephone. I was in Hades because I had failed. But through the failure and being on your knees and being in the muck, which has happened at different times in my life, not all records come from there, but a few have. This one, Scarlet's Walk and Ocean to Ocean, they've come from a place of deep despondency and deep heartache, because, you know, I'd lost myself. But the truth is, I had lost myself a long time before that, Jason. I started losing myself when I started chasing it. And when I started chasing it in my early 20s and just saying, well, I've got to get out of the barroom, so I'll do anything to get out. I'll write any song I need to write. And so, you know, talk about the fame whore archetype. Just took over my brain and my pen and my piano. And I allowed her to do that. I allowed her to do that. And so these songs and these voices that you talk about, there's a conjuring, and there's a narrative that I was trying to tell sonically. I was trying to explain the level of emotions that were happening at the time.
It to me has always felt like this internal tug of war with you and your past, with you and what people want you to be versus what you want to be, their voice versus your voice. They are dragging you down. You're looking for uplift.
I'm dragging me down.
Yeah. So they're actually you. Yeah. You would say those voices are maybe they were your saboteur at the time.
Yes, my saboteur. Absolutely spot on. I have to take responsibility for listening to opinions, to chasing it. And I'm sure any artist that's listening right now that has thought, okay, you know, this is a hard slog. When you get rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection, we're talking years and years and years and years and years and years. Then you go, okay, maybe this singer-songwriter talking about my emotions, maybe I'm on the wrong path. Maybe I need to write in another way. So then you start listening to what people and the labels are signing and what they want to be. And all of a sudden you think, oh, okay, well, maybe I can do that. But just because you can do it because you have the musicality doesn't mean anybody's going to believe you, because it's disingenuous, because it's a lie. Now, I think some people can create a character and step into that character and it works, and they have the facility to make that happen. But that was not working for me.
And you toyed with characters later, but you were very explicit about what you were doing. There was a whole narrative for each character, and there was a purpose.
That's right,
wasn't a pop, you know, persona that was you were putting out into the world. It was, no, this is a character that's been through this, and I've had, you know, Neil Gaiman has written a story about it for me, and here we go.
Here we go.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You really wanted to, like you said, you wanted to rekindle your relationship with the piano, and you wanted this to be your your record. You came back with Girl, Precious Things. What were the other two tracks?
Oh my goodness, you're testing me now.
No, I'm trying to remember. Was Little Earthquakes one? Because
Little Earthquakes
rocks. Yeah.
And Tear in Your Hand.
Tear in Your Hand, which also has guitars, yes. All wonderful tracks. I can't imagine that record not having those tracks. Looking back, do you think, my God, I'm so happy they made it onto the record. I don't know what it would be without them.
Absolutely, Jason, because without them. And Me and a Gun wasn't on the original record. That came later.
So that was something else you submitted after the guitars tracks?
After the guitars.
So you gave them that?
Yeah.
So that you could probably, you know, were you thinking, I'm going to give them this so that I get a win later?
When I was in England, I wrote Me and a Gun after I turned in these four.
Okay.
And we recorded a song called China.
Mm-hmm.
So what had been the original 12 songs, those songs became B-sides, the ones that were moved aside for the four and then China and Me and a Gun. So yes, it's a completely different record. So if Doug had gotten it from the beginning, it wouldn't be what it is. So that's where sometimes you have to kind of go through the process in the battle. And out of the battle, I hung on to the pianos, but we got seven tracks that because of his perception that we wouldn't have had. So, you know, that's where the magic of a relationship can create something good.
So you talk about getting there with, you know, like we were talking about... you know, writing Precious Things, writing Girl. What isn't addressed in Resistance is the moment where you presented these and how you got that green light. So tell me about that.
Oh, my goodness. It was really wonderful understanding that Doug understood. But not just he didn't just understand the four songs. He understood Silent All These Years. And when he got it, he got it. But he thought the four songs I turned in were making the album better. And he was absolutely right. So, of course, then I went to England, and then other things started to happen, which were the other two songs. And I did a cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit, which for to take it to the piano was a bit shocking for some people. But the song is so great that it could hold it. It could hold a completely different read. And that says a lot for the songwriting, for sure. And then we were also working on the visuals, which were driven by the English side.
Mm. Tell me about the visuals. Let's walk down that road because it was such a strong aesthetic. And you did so many videos for the, I mean, I'm going to date myself a little bit, but I had a VHS copy of all the, and I was just amazed at how many videos you did for this record, given that it wasn't, you know, I mean, Janet Jackson did a bunch of videos for Rhythm Nation, but she was Janet Jackson. She was a massive pop star. And you were like, this was your first solo record. And
can we just say we love those Janet Jackson videos?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're excellent. I mean, I would have had a video for every one of them.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's a pop masterpiece, right?
Yes.
You know, for you, that was so ambitious. And I'm just thinking, like, in every video, really, for Little Earthquakes, there's a thread. There's a common aesthetic, and it's impressionistic. I get watercolors from it, and I get it's willowy, and it's... And I really see its influence now, too. I don't know if you've seen some of the videos for Taylor Swift's Folklore and Evermore, but I get I get old school Tory vibes from the Willow video, and I get it from the Cardigan video. And I just love to see that long thread.
What I will tell you is about the team.
Yeah.
Because we have to talk about the team and their genius.
Yeah.
So Elise Taylor, head of marketing, always when you're developing these things, you bring, there's a team behind the curtain that people don't talk about, but they're very essential for a work to be what it is and to be original. I think that's what we're talking about. So Elise Taylor brought in a photographer and filmmaker named Cindy Palmano. And Cindy Palmano brought in a stylist by the name of Karen Benz, who I still work with. And for instance, she's working with WizKid right now. And Karen Benz is probably, well, she's one of the amazing thinkers. You really should talk to her one time about aesthetic, because she will tell you. She sees everything.
And this is Karen who you were walking down the street one day talking, and this is how where Cornflake Girl comes from, right?
Yep. And Karen and I have been working together since 1991. Mm-hmm. So Cindy had introduced us. So therefore, you have a mixture of minds working together, making Silent All These Years video, making the Winter video, making the Crucify video, the China video. And these three brilliant women, you know, they have to be acknowledged, and they need to be acknowledged, because they were doing this in 1991, 1992. So whatever has happened in 2015 or 18 or 19 or whatever, by wonderful artists, great artists, it's still really important for me to acknowledge that these brilliant women were thinking like this in 1991 and 1992, and they should be acknowledged for
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm. It's I'm so happy to hear you bring that up. Because, you know, we fast forward to now, and I'm curious to hear what you think about, you know, women in the and women in rock. It's like, what is rock now as far as, you know, mainstream music is concerned? The charts are now dominated by, you know, pop and hip hop, and there's some rock, but what do you think of the current state of affairs with women in the music industry? Do you think it has gotten easier, harder? Do you think there are new battles to fight?
I think the words easier and harder are tricky words, because I do. I don't want to dilute it down to either one. There are challenges always to stand by your art. And let's face it, there are some artists that have a tougher trek up the mountain than others. Some doors open for whatever reason. It might be the people that they're working with. I'm not saying that they're not great, but there are some artists out there that I know of who have really sometimes had to do serious battle. And then there are others that have you noticed what hasn't changed? Let's say what has not changed, mm-hmm, is that if you get a first record and a second record that's received, then somebody's going to come carving for you, whether it's your third or your fourth or your fifth, or, you know, if you get to make that many. But there usually is a takedown somewhere along the line from some camp. And it might not be the critics, it could be the public, it could be a mixture, it could be that the work just doesn't resonate at the time. I went through that with a record called Boys for Pele, where the critics really, really dragged me through the coals on that. But it was the public. It was the public. And Neil Gaiman said to me, the great writer, at the time, he said, look, okay, you go from town to town. You go town to town. Now, this is before the internet was really happening. And he said, so, and that's changed now with social media. As we know, people can go with TikTok. You can go to the masses, and things can happen really, really fast. But at that time, I had to go. I circled the Midwest so many times, preaching the gospel of Pele.
This was her 1996 album, her third solo album.
Yeah.
For people who aren't Tory obsessive.
Sorry. Of course.
No. That's why I'm here. Yeah.
But that was that. I saw it as my punk harpsichord mm-hmm, record. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about, you know, what is the, how do you define a genre, and can something, you know, you can bring an audience to silence and a pin drop with an a cappella. And that's what's important when we're talking about power. I'm not interested in how loud something is. I'm interested in how it affects people, how it affects the listener. Because just because somebody's screaming their head off doesn't mean they're saying anything that's interesting. Doesn't mean that at all. So it's really important that we talk about, you know, what is the intention of the work and what is it trying to do? And so I think when you ask me about female artists today, of course they have challenges. We had challenges then. What is true, what is absolutely a fact, though, is that you have a big microphone that can get direct to the fans so that it's more difficult for somebody to gaslight somebody or ghost somebody. That's how this happened a lot, Jason, in the 90s, where you don't have to sell an artist to another label. If you've signed 7 records with option on an 8 album, that's 16 years of your life, and that's if you're really prolific and fast.
Yes.
So in 16 years or even 20 years, that's a lot of records. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of time. And what a label can do is make sure your value on the street plummets. So if there is some kind of, what do you call it, persecution going on, or if there's some kind of punishment situation, because it's who do you think you are as an artist standing up to a great CEO? And this happened, mentioning no names, but people would be shelved. So they wouldn't be sold, and their record would just be shelved. And unless they had a really good attorney, really good lawyer, which costs a lot of money, to move that, then that's just a tragic story that would happen. But now with social media, an artist has the ability to share with the public, because the public, I don't think, knows what happens behind the curtain. They certainly didn't know in the 90s.
And everyone's coming out now. People are talking about assault. Performers are talking about assault. People are talking about, I'm going to reference Taylor Swift again. She's like, I'm going to put out the album I wanted to put out.
Great.
You tried to take my masters, and I'm going to put out.
Now, that's one ballsy move.
Yeah, one ballsy move.
That is one huge ballsy move.
And for someone that big to do that, you have to respect someone, you know, for doing that. And I think...
And the work it takes. The work to re-record, to try and... because to revisit, I mean, the idea of revisiting, you know, all my albums, my God, that takes superhuman strength. Yep. So kudos to her. I think it's such a... She deserves respect with a capital R.
Absolutely. I don't think you should do that because you have very long records. So I think it would take you a very long time to go back to 16 records, some of which are like 20 tracks. I have one final question, because nearly 30 years after Little Earthquakes came out, this was your piano rock album. Everybody won, in my opinion, I think. You won, they won, the fans certainly won. I'm thinking in 2021, the best-selling record of the year has been Adele, which is female singer-songwriter, primarily with a piano. Yeah, she's added some, like you said, some, what was the thing you said earlier, some sweetener, some sonic sweetener, right? And taking some more risks with this record, as you started to do, as you know, 3-4 records in, you're like, I'm going to play with electronica now, right? And Choir Girl, and... do you think, hearing that news of the best-selling, you know, record of the year, in the UK as well?
It's encouraging.
Like, do you feel like the piano is getting the last laugh?
Well, I think what it's saying is that people are moved by what she's putting out, by what she's saying, by her intention, by her music. And because people are moved, they're showing that the piano is loved. And boy, is she loved.
And boy, are you loved.
Well, thank you.
And if you could say to someone who had not has not listened to Little Earthquakes yet, which, again, criminal. if going into this record, telling this person what to expect and what you think its legacy is, what would you say, Tori?
Well, I guess the point of Little Earthquakes is encouraging people to be their own person. And sometimes you don't know exactly who you are. And that's okay. You know, the given that everybody knows who they are, some people do. Some people have tapped into that and accepted that. But some of us had to try different pieces on, pieces of ourselves. And then you make this mosaic. You take the pieces and then you find the whole. Sometimes some of us are bits of stained glass, right? That then make a different picture once you stand back from it. Not everybody is a solid, walking piece of art. Some of us came in pieces, and that's okay. And that's what I think Little Earthquakes helped me to find.
Where Were You in 92 was a production of iHeartRadio. The executive producers are Noel Brown and Jordan Runtog. The show was researched, written, and hosted by me, Jason Lanfier, with editing and sound design by Michael Alder June. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a review. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.